Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its mission? To complete more than 5 minutes of its mission without being interrupted by a radio show which keeps doing jokes about situation comedies like Terry and June and 23 other women. To explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before, inside Dennis Thatcher's trousers. Captain's Albert, Stardate 5,436.78794263914286 and a bit. In order to ensure that our mission is not interrupted by a mysterious radio show, we have traveled to the other side of the universe, well out of range of all transmitting capabilities, and landed on the planet Dirty Bath. That's the one with the ring around it. However, on landing, some of the Enterprise's exterior heat shield cooling pipes were damaged. Scotty has informed the ship's plumber, and he says he'll be around in the morning. In the meantime, we are exploring the interior of Dirty Bath, a dark, mysterious...
Jim, over there by that rock. An alien, formless, organic, hot blob.
Well, it wasn't me.
One moment while I take a closer look at it. Fascinating.
Is it dangerous, Mr. Spock?
In its present form, no. But if this organism is allowed to survive, it would eventually wreak irreversible damage to any human brain exposed to its odious influence.
Explain, Spock.
At this moment, we are 500,000 years behind Earth time, taking into account the fact that they've recently put the clocks back. And what is now a harmless organic blob has 5,000 centuries of evolution to go, in which time it will develop into the most virulent and repulsive creature known to man.
You mean...
Yes. What you are looking at will eventually grow into Richard Stillgold.
Helen, keep calm. Calm yourselves. Your recommendation, Mr. Spock?
At this point in the blob's evolution, its stomach is extremely weak. We must feed it with something vile, then it will simply vomit itself to death.
So a search for something vile with which to feed the blob is on. And as the Enterprise's food supplies are getting rather low, we are also on the lookout for an additional source of food for the crew.
Look, Captain, over there, see? A McDonald's.
Well, that's the blob taken care of. Now all we have to do is find food for the crew.
Alien life form approaching 30 degrees right, Jim.
It's a human being, wielding a large knife.
But that's impossible.
You're forgetting something, Jim.
What's that?
In space, anything is possible, as long as you bolt the bed to the floor.
Oh, the man with the knife, Captain! The man with the knife, he's almost upon us!
You, sir, who are you?
They call me the Butcher of Bermondsey.
Why?
I've got a butcher's shop in Bermondsey. So if you're looking for any good fresh meat, it's my pleasure to fix you up, Squire. You know, I mean, help yourself to some complimentary lamb chops.
Why, thank you. Where are they?
Well, just over there, see?
Ah, yes, on your pony and... What's it called, that two-wheeled carriage?
Stop, Jim. It's a trap.
Spock.
Yes?
Don't be such a prat.
Scotty to Captain Kirk. Scotty to Captain Kirk.
Come in, Scotty.
Hello there, Captain Kirk. It's a...
Stop! There's something strange going on. Scotty has just come through a door. A door such as we have on Earth.
Fascinating.
Spock. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Why? What are you thinking?
What are you thinking?
I'm not thinking of anything.
Well, I'm not thinking of anything.
Then I'm thinking what you're thinking.
Great minds think alike, Mr. Spock. And now we must apply them to the enigma of the door.
Look, Captain, outside the door. A milkman has left two bottles of milk on the doorstep.
But
That's impossible.
Why?
Well, the note asks for one bottle of milk and a yogurt.
You are forgetting something, Jim.
What's that?
With Express Dairies, anything is possible.
But, Mr. Spock, we are billions of miles from the nearest Express Dairies depot. How could one of their milkmen possibly deliver here?
There are several ways that Express Dairies could deliver here. A time warp, a 180-degree reversal of the polarity of the universe, or a very fast milk float. But I don't think it is any of those things.
Explain, Spock.
I'm not sure, Jim, but... fascinating.
I said explain, Spock.
Absolutely fascinating.
Spock, stop looking up Uhura's skirt and explain.
I can see the moon, Jim.
Uhura, pull your skirt down.
Yes, Captain.
Now then, Spock.
Look, Jim, just to the right of Uhura, just above the horizon, a moon. The moon of Earth.
But if that is the moon of Earth, that means we are on the planet Earth.
Well, we appear to have lost Arta temporarily, so until we can get it back for you, here's a recording of John Motson giving a commentary on the confrontation between David and Goliath.
Hello there. Well, here I am in the Middle East for the big match between David and Goliath. A match in which David will be stating the case for the slingshot, Goliath will be stating the case for the sword, and I will be stating the obvious. And if I'm any judge, as King Solomon once said, we are in for a tremendous battle indeed. And when I say tremendous, I don't use the word lightly. Because what we are about to witness is a classic case of the good little un David against the good big un Goliath. In fact, one might almost say that what we have here is a typical David and Goliath situation. And when I say typical, I don't use the word lightly. Now, before the match, I did get the chance to talk to David's manager, Ron of Galilee. But what he had to say didn't, in all honesty, make much sense to me. Possibly because I don't speak Hebrew, and he doesn't speak gibberish. But the favorite today must, of course, be Goliath, who, it has to be said, is a very uncultured character, to say the least. Although, in all fairness to him, I wouldn't go so far as to call him a Philistine. Yes, if I'm any judge, David has got himself into quite a heavy situation here. And when I say heavy, I don't use the word lightly. After all, Goliath is something of a giant, whereas David is quite small and light. And when I say light, I don't use the word lightly. Now, while I've been talking, I see that David has, in fact, already placed a stone in his slingshot and taken aim at Goliath and... oh, he's felled him! David's stone has felled Goliath! And Goliath won't like that one little bit! And quite frankly, I, for one, can't see this match going on for much longer. And now Goliath won't be able to see it going on for much longer either, because David has just chopped his head off. Oh, poor Goliath. This is exactly the sort of start he didn't want. I said this is exactly the sort of start he didn't want then, just in case any of you thought that having his head chopped off was exactly the sort of start that Goliath did want. Just as when I'm commentating on a football match, I always say that that is exactly the sort of start that Spurs didn't want if they have an early goal scored against them. Just in case any of you should think that having an early goal scored against them is just the sort of start that Spurs would want. And now, before I talk myself out of a job, I return you to the studio.
John Motson. Oh, I don't know. Maybe I was right the first time. Now, I'm happy to tell you that we can return to Star Trek, and we pick it up at the start of the feature film, Billy Ben Hoggett Rides Again.
Is this the boy, Jim Bob? Is this the boy who raped your daughter? Is this the one who wronged your little girl, Mary Beth?
That's him, Billy Ben. He's the one, all right. Joe John, he's the boy who raped my daughter, Mary Beth.
Joe John? Did you say Joe John? This ain't Joe John, Jim Bob.
That ain't Joe John, Billy Ben?
No, that's Bob Ben, Jim Bob.
Well, in that case, Billy Ben, it's Bob Ben who raped my little girl here, my little Mary Beth.
I think in the interest of a good old Southern justice, we should let Mary Beth herself say who raped her, Jim Bob. Well, Mary Beth, which one of these two boys here was it?
That ain't Mary Beth, Billy Ben.
It ain't Mary Beth, Jim Bob?
Nope. This gal here is my daughter, Mary Beth. This one here is my daughter, Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue.
Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue?
That's what I said, Billy Ben. And Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue was raped by your other boy, Ben Bob Jim Billy Joe John Willie Dan.
My other boy, Ben Bob Jim Billy Joe John Willie Dan, raped your daughter, Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue?
Damn right he did, Billy Ben. Upton raped my daughter, Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue, while she was out walking my new hound dog. My new hound dog, Rover Prince, Lassie Spot, Bonzo Pat, Sheba Chum.
Say, this new hound dog, Rover Prince, Lassie Spot, Jockscamp, Bonzo Pat, Sheba Chum of yourn, he ain't a black and white hound dog by any chance, is it?
What's that got to do with you, Billy Ben?
Because it was a black and white hound dog that raped my pussycat, that's why. It was a black and white hound dog that raped my little pussycat, Whiskey Fluff, Tiddles, Blackie, Tabby, Tom, Snowball, Tiger, Ginger Blossom.
That there's a serious allegation you're making, Billy Ben. I just hope you can prove it, that's all. I just hope you can prove that it was my hound dog, Rover Prince, Lassie Spot, Jock Scamp, Bonzo, Pat, Sheba Chum.
Well, my wife. My wife saw it with her own eyes. My wife, Linda Lou, Pamela Sue, Joe, Ann Mary, Ann Beth, Ann Shy, Ann Bobby Joe, Billy Joe, Betty Joe, looked through the window and saw it with her very own eyes, Jim Bob.
Well, if your wife, Linda Lou, Pamela Sue, Joe, Ann Mary, Ann Beth, Ann Shy, Ann Bobby Joe, Billy Joe, Betty Joe, saw my new hound dog raping your pussycat, why didn't she stop it, Billy Ben?
Because at the time, she was sitting on the John Toilet Lou Closet Latrine Brady Thunderbox, that's right. And in my opinion, I say my opinion, that just about squares the account, Jim Bob.
What do you mean, squares the account, Billy Ben?
I'd rather not go into that.
Come on, I insist you tell me.
Okay. I mean that my boy, Ben Bob Jim Billy Joe John Willie Dan, raping your daughter Bobby Joe Mary Lou Cindy Sue, is canceled out by my wife Linda Lou Pamela Sue Joe Ann Mary Ann Beth Ann Shy Ann Bobby Joe Billy Joe Betty Joe, seeing your new hound dog, Rover Prince Lassie Spot Jock Scamp Skiba Chum, raping my pussycat, Whiskey Fluff, Tiddles, Blackie, Tabby, Tom, Snowball, Tiger, Ginger Blossom, while she was sitting on the John Toilet Lou Closet between Pretty Bob and Billy Slamatory Thunderbox.
What?
I say, the my boy, Ben Bob.
Priest! What?
I said priest!
That's better, now switch that television set off.
We present the 17th minute of the show. Well, actually, it's about the 13th minute of the show, but this week it's Debbie Greenwood, and we want to get it over and done with. So, here telling us about a day in her life is Miss Debbie Greenwood.
Hello, everybody. It's nice here, isn't it? Well then, a day in my life. Well, I usually wake up around about 8:30, which is a bit inconvenient, really, because I get out of bed about 7:30. Well, that was a joke. Nice, wasn't it? Well, it is my ambition to have a villa in the Algarve. Aston Villa. That was another joke. That was nice as well, wasn't it? You see, as well as doing television presenting, I have started doing jokes as well, as my agent told me that I should try to stretch myself. And I asked my good friend, Frank Boff's advice, the best way to stretch myself, and he suggested the rack. He is nice, Frank, always ready with a laugh and a joke. And a pullover. For breakfast, I always have a boiled egg. Boiled eggs are nice, aren't they? They remind me of Frank Boff's bald head, so I like them a lot. Especially when I crack them with my spoon. I after breakfast, if I'm working on my children's quiz show first class, I brush up on my questioning technique, because I have found that the way a question is phrased can be all important. Now, for instance, if I said, "What is the name of the man who invented the steam engine?" I'd be giving the answer away, wouldn't I? James Steam Engine. Oh, sorry. James what? Or I could be doing one of the many other shows that the BBC keep putting me in the hope that they'll eventually come up with something that I'm not embarrassing in. For instance, I could be attending a rehearsal for my show Tricks of the Trade. That's the one where I pass on useful tips such as, if you break one of your nylon stockings, you can use the fan belt of your car as a temporary measure. I think. But if I have not got any television work to do, I stay at home and work on my career. Now, this year, I have set myself three goals. One, to become an actress. Two, to get rid of every last trace of my Lancashire accent. And three, to get a part on Coronation Street. Goodbye.
Miss Debbie Greenwood, ladies and gentlemen, living proof that as well as beauty, you can also have brains. Not necessarily working, but then you can't have everything, can you? And now, back to the robber.
Move it, come on, move it.
Yes, yes, please, please, don't shoot.
Right, is this the Picasso?
Yes, that's it.
Thanks, now, down on the floor, flat on your face, move. Right, I'm off now. You start counting at 500 and don't make a move until you have.
Right. Just a minute.
Yeah?
I can't count.
What?
I can't count. You asked me to count to 500, but, I can't count.
Not at all.
No, perhaps I could do something else. How about if I was to say the alphabet? I know the alphabet.
Right, say the alphabet. I've got to go.
A, B, C. Excuse me.
What?
What comes after C?
I thought you said you knew the alphabet.
Well, it's such a long time since I've had to use it. I tell you what. How would it be if I sang the Lincolnshire Poacher?
Do that. Sing the Lincolnshire Poacher.
When I was bound apprentice in famous Lincolnshire, oh, tis my delight and a shiny nut.
Oh, well, I served my master for more than 7 years.
What?
What, the next line after when I was bound apprentice in famous Lincolnshire is, full well I served my master for more than 7 years.
Ah. Full well I served my master for more than 7 years. Oh, tis my delight and a shiny
nut. Till I took up to court in. Till I took up to court in, as you shall quickly hear, you twannock.
Sorry? Till I took up to courting, as you shall quickly hear, you twannock. Oh, tis my...
No, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be escaping. Back on the floor, you, and count to 500.
Yeah, I told you, I can't count. I know some poetry. I could recite Eskimo Nell, if you like.
Do that. Recite Eskimo Nell. I'm off.
I've just got back from the Yukon, and I've got a strange tale to tell. A dead-eyed Dick and Mexican Pete and a whore named Eskimo Nell. It was snowing that day in the... What are you waiting for?
I've never heard an Eskimo Nell before. Is it good?
Yes. It's very funny. You can stay and listen if you like.
Oh, cheers.
It was snowing that day on the Yukon. Did I dick
the scratching... Oh, hang on. If I listen to it, I won't be making off with your Picasso, will I? What else can you do?
Well, the only thing I can suggest is that I listen to the radio for a few minutes while you make off.
All right, I'll switch it on then.
I'm thinking of writing a poem. One that's quite self-effacing and mocks. Like the poems I wrote in the 60s, when I won up a Cherry Knox. Because that same talent show is back with us, though not hosted by sincere old Huey, but by a bloke by the name of Bob Monkhouse, who comes over all smarmy and gooey. Yes, I'm thinking of writing a poem so I can get on Opportunity K and bring to my career a renaissance. And I think I will write it today. Because I'd love some more fame and more fortune, like that little girl singer called Tony, who Bob sat on his knee when she triumphed and stroked her like she was a pony. No, I don't think I will write that poem. For I've just had this thought, you see. Because if I won, I'd be joined by Bob Monkhouse, and he might try to sit me on his knee.
That was Pam Ayres, this week's subject in our series, Where Are They Now and Who Gives a Toss Anyway?
Present a great offer from the makers of
Dupieux Kitchens.
That's right. The makers of Dupieux Kitchens are making an unprecedented offer. Buy one before December the 30th, 1999, and we will give you absolutely free of charge a
free oven, free hobby unit, free dishwasher, free extractor hood, free refrigerator,
and a
free £1,000 holiday.
Furthermore, if you order your new
Dupieux Kitchen
before you die, we will reduce the price by
75%.
How can we afford to offer you such a
fabulous deal?
Simple. Our kitchen units are
grossly overpriced.
In fact, you could buy far better quality units elsewhere for a
fraction of the price.
Our units are overpriced because we have to build into their price the cost of all our
extremely expensive advertising.
Why don't we at
Dupieux Kitchens
dispense with all the
free appliances
and
expensive advertising
and sell the kitchen units at a fair price, simply because, as research shows, the vast majority of the population are
gullible. You
are one of these people. We can say that with the greatest confidence, because if you were not
gullible,
you would have stopped listening to this commercial long ago. In fact, if you are still listening, you are more than just gullible. You are a
stupid pillock.
Don't delay. Phone today, and one of our trained consultants will call round at your house without delay to
bull you something awful
and call you into buying your new Dupieux kitchen before you can say
free washing machine,
which is what you will be receiving along with all your other
free appliances,
like those already named, plus a
free toaster, free electric kettle, free coffee maker, free can opener, free parking, free Nelson Mandela.
The free Nelson Mandela is a beautiful 6 inches high black figurine which will look wonderful on one of the shelves of your new
Dupieux kitchen.
So
buy one today.
It's time for our serial set in a tabloid newspaper office. Hold the third page.
Kevin, come here a minute.
Yes, Mr. Walker?
This first effort of yours for our News in Brief column. A lady reader phoned the Daily Globe yesterday to report that she'd heard the year's first cuckoo in Dingley Wood. It's good stuff, lad. A model of modern-day reporting. Concise, factual and truthful.
It's all right then, is it, Mr. Walker?
I couldn't have written it better myself, son. You might have included the lady's name, but it isn't absolutely essential.
Well, she never actually gave me her name.
Oh, yes, maybe we should make that clear, then. Late yesterday, a mysterious, unknown woman who refused to give her name... No. Late yesterday, a mysterious woman, 36, 24, 36, who refused to give her name... What does she sound like?
Oh, quite pleased.
Excited beyond all belief.
Because she knew that others may have heard the first cuckoo too and might get the news to us first. But I remember her saying how glad she was that when she phoned, she got through immediately.
And obviously suffering from severe shock. Now, what exactly did she say to you?
Well, just that she'd gone out to get some fresh air on account of her having asthma.
Asthma?
And...
Just a minute. Gulping desperately for breath, panted out to me that she was the victim of yet another violent attack.
A violent attack?
Of asthma.
Oh, yeah.
So, Kevin, what else did she desperately pant out?
Well, that she'd heard a cuckoo in Dingley Wood.
Remind me, Kevin, what is a cuckoo exactly?
It's a bird.
Doesn't it force its young onto others?
Yeah.
Cuckoo. It also means mad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
By the mad molester of Dingley Wood. Ah, let's see how that reads now. Late yesterday, a mysterious unknown woman, 36, 24, 36, who refused to give her name, excited beyond all belief and obviously suffering from shock, gulping desperately for breath, panted out to me that she was the victim of yet another violent attack by the mad molester of Dingley Wood. Vicar questioned.
Vicar questioned?
I asked one the time on the way in this morning.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a nice piece you've written there, Kevin. Here, you can take it down to the proof room.
Yeah, right, Mr. Walker.
Well, go on then, lad. What's the matter?
Well...
Yes?
I was just wondering if there was some way we could get Joan Collins into it.
By ecky thump, Kevin. You're going to be a star reporter, believe me. I know talent when I...
Yes, Hawker here. Brand, I'm at the Sheraton restaurant. I've got something for you. Could you meet me here in half an hour?
Make it 3/4.
Okay, see you then. Waiter, take this phone away now. I'd like to order.
Certainly, sir. Here's the menu.
Oh, I don't need that. Just bring me the roast beef.
Bring me the roast beef what?
What's that?
I said, bring me the roast beef what?
Well, bring me the roast beef and whatever comes with it.
Bring me the roast beef, please. Or are you one of those people who think that it isn't necessary to extend the common courtesies to a humble waiter?
I can be as courteous as the next man.
Then I'll thank you to say please.
All right, very well, very well. Bring me the roast beef, please.
Sir.
What?
Please, sir.
Oh, now, look, come on. I don't mind saying please, but I'm damned if I'm going to call you sir.
And I'm damned if I'm going to take your order if you don't.
In that case, bring me the manager.
Bring me the manager what?
Bring me the manager, please.
Bring me the manager, please, sir.
Look, if I say that, I might as well say, bring me the roast beef, please, sir, mightn't I?
Well, why don't you then cut out the middleman?
Very well, very well. Bring me the roast beef, please, sir.
You handsome dog, you.
What?
Please, sir, you handsome dog, you.
Oh, now, really, look, come on.
Do you want the roast beef or don't you?
Well, of course I want the blessed...
Then say, please, sir, you handsome dog, you.
Please, please, sir, you handsome dog, you.
I can't hear you.
Please, sir, you handsome dog, you.
Prince among waiters.
Look, a joke is a joke.
Prince
but...
among waiters.
All right. Prince among waiters.
Whose boots I am not fit to lick.
Whose boots I am not fit to lick.
Most noble of men, scholar, raconteur, wit, and seducer of 1,000 virgins before breakfast.
Most noble of men, scholar, raconteur, wit, and seducer of 1,000 virgins before breakfast.
Thank you.
Whose physical prowess would make Hercules himself look like a 7-stone weakling.
Ooh, nice one.
Yes, whose speed would make Sebastian Coe look like a hedgehog with piles.
Love it.
Whose sexual feats would make Casanova look like a Trappist monk on Valium.
Ooh, that's a good one, I must remember that.
Defender of the faith, knight, errant, OBE, CBE, VCTS, B and bar, and lord of all the universe. Would you please bring me the roast beef?
No.
Why not?
This isn't my table.
Waiter! Ah, there you are. Waiter, you've given me a bill and I've paid once. What on earth do you want me to do with it?
Pay it again, Sam.
Pardon?
You heard me. Play it again, Sam.
Oh, sure. Sure thing, Rick.
All the restaurants in the world, I have to end up in this one. Still, there's a bar here, and any joint with a bar can't be all that bad.
You have been listening to Star Turk 2, starring Christopher Godwin, Jeffrey Holland, Susie Blake, and Fred Harris.
I'm tending table here in order to get a grub steak together so I can open my own fast food joint. That's right. And so I can bump guys off without the finger of suspicion pointing at me, I'm opening a place specializing in baked potatoes with a cheese and cyanide filling. I'm going to call it The Spud You Don't Like.
The show was written by Terry Ravenscroft.
But what about all the stiffs that'll be lying about old Rick Spud You Don't Like, I hear you ask? Well, I thought about that, too. And so it doesn't look suspicious having prostrate, lifeless bodies hanging around. I'm going to make the place a replica of the House of Lords.
And produced by Lord Martin Fisher.
Here's looking at you, Your Lordship.